morning, birds. And squirrels. We have some squirrel news today. It's coming up. I feel I need to send out a good morning kiss to someone today. Could be somebody you know. You ready?
Ever a chance to meet some old friends on the street. They wonder how does a man get to be this way. Always got a smile in my face, anytime and any place. And every time they ask me why, I just smile and say, you've got to kiss an angel good morning. And better know you think about her when you're gone. Kiss an angel good morning. And love her like the devil when you get back home. Though people may try to guess the secret of our happiness, but some of them never learn that it's a simple thing. The secret I'm speaking, dog, is a woman and a man in love. And the answer is in the song that I always sing. You got to kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone. Kiss an angel good morning and love her like the devil when you get back home. Kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone. Kiss an angel good morning, love her like the devil when you get back home.
Mr. Charlie Pride. You know what? Charlie passed away a couple of days ago. Do you know who Charlie Pride was? I don't know that you would, but, I played to Charlie Pride's music a long time ago because I was a country western DJ for a while. Charlie was the first and only black man who broke through as a country musician, and he had a bunch of hits, and he died of the COVID a couple of days ago. He was in his 80s. So Charlie Pride with a hit called Kiss an Angel Good Morning. Let's start again. It's 4 after the hour. Today is the 15th of December. It's a Tuesday. It's Pirate Radio from Chicago on bleat.network. And as I talked to the birds this morning, it's chilly out there. 25 as we went on the air today. Not going to get a whole hell of a lot warmer either. Our high is about 34 today. Snow in the forecast a couple of days later on this week, but should be all right for today. So, it's official. It's official everywhere but on Fox News and in North Korea. The Electoral College affirmed Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump yesterday. President-elect called on Americans to unite as more Republicans acknowledged his win. Well, it's mighty nice of you folks. Attorney General William Barr is out. He's gone. He's done. We predicted that, and that, of course, is... I don't know. He's probably trying to escape the Mar-a-Lago-berg trials. 1/4 of Americans say they probably or definitely would not take a coronavirus vaccine. I had to get up and ponder this. Yesterday, of course, the big news, you know, the vaccine was out, and everybody's whooping it up, and we're talking about that. I'm ready. Come on, bring it on. Well, 1/4 of Americans say that they are not interested in that. What? That's according to a survey released today by the Kaiser Family Foundation, which found that Republicans, rural people, and black Americans are among the most hesitant to be vaccinated. I don't know about that. We'll dig into that. The skepticism, while not totally unanticipated, still represents a challenge to the country. Oh, you think? This is the New York Times today. I don't know. Riddle me that one. I don't get it. Russia has released additional results from a clinical trial of its leading coronavirus vaccine, which I don't know. Did you know that? Which is called Sputnik. Sputnik 5. You baby boomers who may be listening, remember that Sputnik 5 was the satellite that the Russians put up to challenge us. Anyway, Sputnik 5, not the satellite, but the coronavirus vaccine, shows an efficacy rate of 91.4%. But get this, unlike in the West, and wow, we're just at the beginning of this now, as different countries and different vaccines compete, the Russian authorities have taken a different path on vaccination. They have promoted the government-funded shot, which is based on a genetically modified common cold virus. They did that before the testing was complete. Moscow approved Sputnik V for emergency use in August before they had done wide-scale clinical trials. There you go. See, I get up and read this so you don't have to. And this is good. All right. I like this. I woke up today and I wrote down the word meta news. You know what metadata is? Metadata is, as you know, I'm sure it's data or data about data or data. And I was thinking meta news. We now have news about news. Here's news. I haven't had time to whip this one out yet, but there you go. According to Brazilian news outlet G1, filmmaker Ernesto Galeado dropped his iPhone 6 out of a plane last Friday from a 300-meter height, that's about 1,000 feet, and found it intact next morning. Wait a minute. You said you don't have enough video? I haven't seen this yet, but I'm going to screen this as soon as I can. So he drops the phone out of an airplane. The only damage was to the screen's protector, with the rest of the phone miraculously in near-perfect condition. The incident happened over Pero Beach, some 100 miles east of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. What are you doing? I want to call this guy up. Hey, Ernesto, what are you doing hanging out the window with a phone in your hand, the window of an airplane? He said it's something that if you tell someone, they wouldn't believe it. I don't believe it anyway. Since Galeado was taking a video at the time the phone left his hand, the device continued shooting video during the fall. Unfortunately, it says the video isn't as beautiful as you might imagine. The phone was constantly spinning, so the video it took is just one big blur. Until the phone hit the sand, and then you can imagine what happened. Then check out the video over at G1. This is not the first time an iPhone has survived. Is this from Apple? Buy one. This is not the first time an iPhone has survived a fall from an airplane. You know, if you're kind of awkward, you might want to know that. In 2015, a Texas man dropped his iPhone from 9,000 feet and found it scratched, but working, although his external battery was missing. There's a band called Falling in Reverse. Stop!
when did I become so cool?
Band called Falling in Reverse on what is Ronnie Radke's birthday. Ronnie Radke, known for being our producer Spark's favorite musician growing up. Ronnie has a birthday today. 37, he was born in Las Vegas. And that's his current band, Falling in Reverse. There you go. All right. It's 14 after the hour here. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago. It's bleep.network. Got to note that we were station was skipping here on the internet. Feel free and please drop me a note if you're not getting us at a time when you think you should be. It's radioanything@gmail.com. Let me know what's going on and what time, and we'll try to straighten that out as we all try to figure out how to do internet radio at 14 after the hour. On a Tuesday and a chilly one here in Chicago, as I mentioned. This day in, let's see here. I've got some interesting things in the news. 1961, Adolf Eichmann was executed. I mentioned the Mar-a-Logo-Berg trials. That's my way of saying we're going to hold some of these Trumpsies to account. And, well, the real Nuremberg trials yielded... The guy's name was Adolf Eichmann. He was sentenced to death on this day in 1961 for war crimes. And there you go. He was hanged for his part in the Holocaust. That happened in 1961. I might point out that the war, the World War II ended in 1945. So it took them, what is that, like 11 years to bring him to justice. This day in 1973, wait a minute. The American Psychiatric Association declared that homosexuality is not a mental illness. So, all right. And on this day, way back in 1832 in Dijon, France. Dijon. You're saying, whoa, I didn't know I could speak French. No, I can't. On this day in Dijon, France. In Dijon, France. Gustave Eiffel was born.
Eiffel was born in Dijon in 1832, the son of a prosperous family in the coal and iron business. After graduation from engineering school, he joined a railroad construction company and by 26 was supervising the building of a railroad bridge spanning the Gironde River at Bordeaux. He formed his own company and enjoyed a growing reputation as a careful builder of factories and bridges, most of which were constructed using wrought iron. His bridge over the Douro River in Portugal gracefully stretched out across a 200-foot deep gorge with a single arch-supported span 525 feet long. When Frederick Bartholdi, building the Statue of Liberty, his gift to the United States, needed help supporting his copper-sheathed lady, he turned to young Gustav Eiffel. The result was an interior wrought iron framework that has stood firm for a century. As plans for a centennial celebration of the French Revolution began to materialize, Eiffel entered the competition for a 1,000-foot tower to serve as centerpiece for the exposition. He won, hands down. Enthusiasm was not universal, however. A petition from some of France's most renowned artists and sculptors protested with all our might, with all our indignation, in the name of menaced French art and history against the erection in the heart of our capital of the useless and monstrous Eiffel Tower. Most of them were converted to enthusiastic support when the construction was complete. Using 12,000 sections prefabricated at his plant in the Paris suburbs, Eiffel erected the tower in a little over 2 years. It was a huge hit. 2 million paying visitors in the next few months virtually wiped out the builder's debt. In his later years, Gustave Eiffel designed the gigantic locks of the ill-fated French Panama Canal Company. When that failed, he became interested in aeronautics and built the first usable wind tunnel for testing airplane wings and propellers. He died in 1923 at the University of Richmond.
Wow, Gustave Eiffel. You know what, I have a couple of things to say about Gustave Eiffel. If you know Chicago at all, you know the Ferris wheel that's out there on Navy Pier. Well, the big first Ferris wheel that appeared, in fact, the Ferris wheel, invented by a guy whose name was Ferris, popped up at the World's Columbian Exposition in, I think that was like 1894. Anyway, that was the Americans' answer to the Eiffel Tower. That was the American engineering answer to the Eiffel Tower was the Ferris wheel way back when. So yeah, I got that to say about that. I did see the Eiffel Tower. I was in Paris once. Yeah, I was mugged. I was mugged on the way to the Eiffel Tower. I was on the Paris subway and the metro, and I was distracted by a couple of, young kids that kind of go and distract. I was not injured or harmed or anything, but they managed to get me to accidentally flip my wallet across the car, and some nice person picked it up and restored it. And anyway, so I was almost the victim of a crime at the Eiffel Tower. I don't want to bring up bad stuff on Gustav Eiffel's birthday, but that is in fact what happened. You know what though? Now this is pretty neat. This is neat. I have a list here of 10 inventions that you had no idea they were French. You ready? Okay. The hairdryer. What? I know. French hairstylist Alexander Godefroy invented the first hairdryer in 1888. Another Frenchman. His model is neither portable nor handheld. That's gonna slow things down. But it meant that people could finally stop drying their hair using a vacuum cleaner. It says here they actually did that. Well, how about canned food? Wait a minute. Canned food from the French? It's true. Often the case that inventors don't get the profit from their inventions, but this one made a guy named Nicolas Appert a rich man. So way back in 1795, Napoleon offered a prize of 12,000 francs, no idea what that is, to anybody who could create a cheap way to preserve large amounts of food. So he had this big army, you know, and he's on his way to, you know, invade Russia. Appert took the prize in 1809 with a method of canning involving glass jars sealed with wax. I know those. All right. Braille's French, of course, Louis Braille. Blind in both eyes when he was a child. After being accepted at the Royal Institute for Blind Youth, he developed what we know today as Braille. But get this, I didn't know this. It wasn't recognized as a valuable invention until long after he died, did Braille. All right, into the kitchen. Mayonnaise. Mayonnaise. I would like some mayonnaise. And mayonnaise is French legend has it that the Duke de Richelieu commanded French forces and he took Port Mayon. All right, after defeating the Spanish, that was the story, the Duke's chef couldn't find enough cream on the island to make an appropriate sauce, so he whipped up oil and eggs into a sauce and he named it mayonnaise. How about the hot air balloon? My uncles, the Wright brothers, were the fixed wing people, but before them, the Montgolfier brothers, Jean-Michel and Jacques Cartier, invented the hot air balloon. Yeah, it's just contagious. It's just contagious when you start seeing this. That happened in 1783. Later that year, on November 21st, the hot air balloon made its first untethered flight with humans aboard. So that's French. How about this? pencil sharpeners. These are inventions. You did not know were French. The French mathematician named Bernard de Lachibon applied for the first patent for a pencil sharpener in 1828. Apparently, it was, do you know how to sharpen a pencil with a knife? Can you imagine that? The guy was willing. He probably had all kinds of cuts all over himself. He patented a pencil sharpener. And then in 1847, another guy improved his invention and it created the modern pencil sharpener. So then finally, one French invention. You didn't know this was French, did you? The Etch-a-Sketch. It's true, just in time for Christmas. This guy just died not so long ago. His name was André Cassagnan. He was a French inventor, an electrical technician, a toy maker, and a kite designer. He died in 2013. He was 86. He developed the Etch-a-Sketch in the 1950s, and companies have been selling it ever since 1960. I'd like an Etch-a-Sketch. It's all about the music this morning. Tell you what, let's do something else. Want to? I have an excerpt from President Obama's new book, which is called A Promised Land. Have you heard? You heard about the book? I'll tell you what we'll do. Let's see if we can put my finger on the right button. A Promised Land. This is the book written by the president, and well, he reads it. Let's see what he had to say.
And I confess that there have been times during the course of writing this book, as I've reflected on my presidency and all that's happened since, when I've had to ask myself whether I was too tempered in speaking the truth as I saw it. Too cautious in either word or deed. Convinced as I was that by appealing to what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature, I stood a greater chance of leading us in the direction of the America we've been promised. I don't know. What I can say for certain is that I'm not yet ready to abandon the possibility of America, not just for the sake of future generations of Americans, but for all of humankind. For I'm convinced that the pandemic we're currently living through is both a manifestation of and a mere interruption in the relentless march towards an interconnected world, one in which peoples and cultures can't help but collide. In that world of global supply chains, instantaneous capital transfers, social media, transnational terrorist networks, climate change, mass migration, and ever-increasing complexity, we will learn to live together, cooperate with one another, and recognize the dignity of others, or we will perish. And so the world watches America, the only great power in history, made up of people from every corner of the planet.
One morning I woke up and I knew it all. A new day, a new way, and new eyes for all. Lord, the way of the mind and the sky is clearing and then
Hello again. It's 9:30 in Chicago, or it's half past the hour where you are. You know what? We are having some technical difficulties this morning. You're listening to the Bleat Network at bleat.network. This is Pandemic Pirate Radio. Or maybe you're not, because we've had some problems on the server. I'm just realizing. All right. I'll tell you what. This is a good time for me to remind you that we rebroadcast the show all day long at the same place. It's bleat.network, and we'll see what we can do. So if you missed any of what you just started to hear, you want to tune in later. I know we were unfortunately scrambling the president's book there. So you know what? We're just going to plunge on here. That is the idea of the program here, and I think our lives in 2020 here. It's 31 past the hour. And let's see here. Here's something I wanted to do. There's a house in almost every neighborhood where people just go nuts with Christmas decorations. I'm lucky enough to have some neighbors that do the same thing. But you don't often have a Hanukkah house. Well, this guy calls himself the Clark Griswold of Hanukkah. Let's hear him talking about his Hanukkah house.
My wife calls me Hanukkah Harry. I joke around and say that people can call me, I'm the Jewish Griswold. This is my favorite time of year. As a matter of fact, this morning we were actually listening to Christmas and Hanukkah music on the way to school. You know, it's the festival of lights, you know, it's the holidays, everybody's happy. I started getting attention, from the neighbors obviously, but 3-4 years ago, and I've had people from Israel and Canada. I got to sit with each one, you know, they're coming here and hold to see their family, and they're like, you know, their families are saying, hey, you have to stop by and look at this house. This is my dreidel that spins. I think probably over 1,000 people every year come by and see the lights. This is the Hanukkah house.
It looks like a big Hanukkah house.
The Hanukkah house.
Yeah.
Since I was a child, my father did the lights. You know, I was always like, you know, it should be for both Jews and Christians or whoever. I really wanted to experience the traditions.
We started with a few strands, a few little decorations.
You know, just the roof, and then I started doing more. Every year, I would buy more and more decorations.
And next thing you knew, it was this kind of thing.
I just went to the store and bought a ton of lights.
Bill definitely put a lot of time, love, and life into his house.
It takes me about 3 solid weeks to put everything up. I would think about 100 or so strands of lights. I mean, I couldn't even tell you how many bulbs I have.
Oh, Hanukkah, oh, Hanukkah, the
I always see the flaw.
It's constantly fixing and making sure they look perfect every year.
That bulb might be off. You know, that strand might be a different shade of blue. I'm pretty neurotic. I think if you know me, I'm an all or nothing kind of guy.
It's not something you'll see daily, so I think it's just like really special.
I like a big teddy bear.
I've wanted to tone it down. My kids and my wife are like, you know, you can't. You're already embedded in this. There's too much. You can't go backwards.
I think it's important for especially Jewish kids to come see a house that's decorated for Hanukkah because we see so much of the wonderful Christmas lights, which are beautiful and amazing, but we don't have anything we can relate to when it comes to Judaism and Hanukkah during this season. So I think what the Grossmans are doing at the Hanukkah house brings just a little extra light to what we're celebrating at home. Kind of hilarious to see how many people come to our street just to press the button to turn on the music and watch everything dance, and it's really fun to watch people doing a little jig or a little horror themselves.
Around till 10:30 at night, you hear the music button go off.
Every year someone asks, what are you going to do next year? What are you going to do next year? So I end up doing, you know, it's always the same concept. I always add like maybe an extra inflatable or, you know, I'll make another, you know, I have to hand make a lot of my decorations, so I'll make something new every year.
I think it's really important because it's a family tradition that we've always done, and I think that just like shows like what we do, and I think it's like special.
To be honest, what I hope for, I want more families, Jewish families, to hang lights or, you know, put an inflatable out. That's what my ultimate goal out of all this. I just want to spread the joy, you know, have other families do what I do. You don't have to go to this extent, but, you know, growing up, I was always jealous. You know, I wanted the lights, I wanted the Christmas tree, you know. But, we could do that too.
If you get a second, go check this out. It's called Hanukkah House. You'll watch the video. It's wild. It's wild. You know, this is the time of year when everybody's just trying to figure it out. And I love that whole concept. It's 36 after the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio from Chicago on bleat.network. I think we've got our server calmed down. I hope so. If not, we will continue to work on it. You know, one thing I wanted to note, we mentioned this the other day. The Star of Bethlehem is coming back here. Yeah, mark your calendar for December 21st for 45 minutes after sunset. So let's see here. Today is, I think that's next Monday. Do I have that right? I think that's next Monday. For 45 minutes after local sunset, the Star of Bethlehem will shine for the first time since 1226. Now, the Star of Bethlehem, I believe, is actually a confluence of planets that happen to be in the same part of the sky, and it makes it look bright. I think that's right. I think that was the deal with the ancient Christmas story. But it's popping up again, we think. We think it's popping up again. All right. Reminds me of an old joke I used to tell. See if I can remember how this went. I don't know. They canceled Christmas in Washington, D.C. Why is that? They couldn't find a virgin or three wise men.
You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and Blitzen, but do you recall the most famous reindeer of all? Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer games. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say, Rudolph, with your nose so bright, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? Then how the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you'll go down in history.
You know, the interesting thing about some of these classic Christmas things that we hear year after year after year is you get the scoop on them. I read that Gene Autry was doing a standard recording session, and as luck would have it, he'd had a couple of pops, you know. So he was a little bit in the bag, so I read, when he recorded that. And who would have thunk it became a hit? That's the Rudolph song here. It's 41 after the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio, Chicago. As we do a mashup of stuff, the month of December 2020, and try to figure it all out here. I noticed that we are about to have, some pretty interesting stuff coming up on the show here. We're going to talk about phobias tomorrow. Who doesn't have a phobia? You do not have a phobia? I'll tell you, we got all kinds of phobias to choose from. We're going to get into that a little bit. And just the natural world, I think that I think this is a time when I'm just interested in all the animals. And not the human beings, the all the animals around us, the birds and the squirrels and the bees and all that stuff here. So that's happening. In fact, I have a little bit of an editorial comment about this, but there was an article over the weekend about squirrel tables. You know what these are? a squirrel table now has emerged as one of the quirkiest trends of the pandemic. They resemble miniature picnic tables. They're typically made from cedar or pine. They're measured about 8 inches by 5 inches. People affix them to fences or trees. What is a squirrel table? The idea is to have a squirrel come and eat at your table. The sight of the animal doing something so human-like and peculiar has captured the hearts of thousands. This is the New York Times Sunday edition. There are hundreds on sale at Etsy, priced at, oh, come on now, really? $20 to $85? Yeah. Squirrels were once nearly eradicated from cities. I don't know where you live. They're not as cute as you might think. Let me plunge on and then we'll comment about that. They were thought of as crop pests or game. According to an associate professor in history at the University of Pennsylvania, that this was all happening this was happening in modern times. Let me reverse it. But in the mid-1800s, cities like Philadelphia and Boston began reintroducing squirrels to public squares to beautify and enliven the urban landscape. So there is this whole article about squirrel tables. These days, squirrels are now part of the landscape. I gotta tell you, I'm in the studio here, and we had a squirrel break in these cute little animals. They chew through screens. I know. The squirrel came, it chewed through the screen, and then had to reinforce the window with a plexiglass. So anyway, I guess there are two schools on the squirrel thing. All right, for folks that want to have the squirrel table, you should know there are people like Maria Teresa. She's an elementary school lunchroom aide. She lives in Bolingbrook, Illinois, and she has found friendship. She has now new resident squirrels. She's named them Lucy Big Red and Lil Red. She built a squirrel table, and it's just funny to me to see a squirrel sitting at a picnic table eating, said Miss Trezza. Come on now, really? No, we're not. I'm not questioning anybody's mental capability. We're all under a little bit of pressure. This goes on and on. This is like an entire page of squirrel picnic tables featuring a squirrel named Thelonious Monk. Oh, my God. All right, we'll cap it here. I think this says it all. And it says here somewhere that squirrels and chipmunks are related. So stand by for that. The best quote in the article: he'll do anything for a hazelnut.
All right, you chipmunks, ready to sing your song?
I'll say the door. Yeah, let's sing it now.
Okay, Simon.
Okay.
Okay, Theodore.
Okay.
Okay, Alvin. Alvin. Alvin! Okay, fellas, get ready. That was very good, Simon.
Naturally.
Very good, Theodore. Alvin, you were a little flat. Watch it, Alvin. Alvin. Alvin! Boys.
Let's sing it again.
Enough. Let's not overdo it.
You know, this has been the weirdest morning in many years. Did you hear anything odd about that? If you had never heard that before, you're a lot younger than I am. But that was the most annoying novelty Christmas record of my youth, and we were missing a track. What? Oh man, I don't know. We got a thing to do this morning. It is 11 before the hour. It's Pandemic Pirate Radio. Boy, is it from Bleat.network this morning. Send me an email. RadioAnything@gmail.com. Anything on your mind? Things going on? You want to hear about that? Want to hear about this? Or you'll send me a toll-free voicemail. It's 844-220-3300. And you can leave that, and we'll include that in our crazy morning thing here. Yeah, that was an engineering marvel. The squirrels had to do that. They had to speed them up manually there. So, all right. I had not mentioned this morning, and I don't want to jump the gun here. You know probably that we had a hacking incident a couple of days ago. Do you know about it? Well, anyway, the scope of the hack, engineered by one of Russia's premier intelligence agencies, became clear yesterday. Some Trump administration officials acknowledged that other federal agencies, well, get this, the State Department, the Department of Homeland Security, parts of the Pentagon had been compromised. Investigators were struggling to determine the extent to which the military intelligence community and nuclear laboratories were affected by a highly sophisticated attack. United States officials did not detect the attack until recent weeks. And then only, this is, I know nothing about this. We'll get into this a little bit, I hope. I know nothing about the ins and outs, but something grabbed me here that the U.S., our officials, didn't know anything about the attack, until a private cybersecurity firm called FireEye alerted American intelligence officials that hackers had evaded layers of defenses. It was evident that the Treasury and the Commerce Departments, the first agency reported to be breached, were only part of a far larger operation. About 18,000 private and government users downloaded a Russian-tainted software update, kind of a Trojan horse, that gave its hackers a foothold into victim systems. That's according to SolarWinds, and that is the I don't know if that's the punchline or something, but this whole thing has to do with a software company that not a lot of people have ever heard of. It's a software company called SolarWinds. It's two decades old. It is in Austin. It's barely known outside geeky tech circles, but its customer lists includes just about every branch of the United States military and 4/5 of the Fortune 500 companies. Many of those customers found themselves ensnared in the attack because suspected Russian hackers inserted a vulnerability into a popular SolarWinds software product designed to give users a bird's eye view of the varied web of applications that keep their operations humming. So you get it. So you go to SolarWinds does so much that you can see its overview, but apparently when you look for its overview, that is when this Trojan horse kicked into action. I know the election's over. And we're still getting hacked by the Russians there. So we will we'll monitor that. Also, I'm gonna do a better job at understanding why people do not want to take this vaccine. I don't get it. I read that early on that perhaps a quarter of all people, a quarter of the American population doesn't want to take a vaccine. I don't understand that. So before I shoot from the hip, we'll do more about that. That's according this morning to a survey by the Kaiser organization. So that's going on. I don't know. You got theories about any of this? You'll leave me a message if you want to. It's 844-220-3300. Send me an email at radioanything@gmail.com as we try to figure out what is going on. And I'll tell you, this has just been a weird, weird, weird time. So, yeah. What else we got? Oh, how about this? This is good news. Sudan is off the state sponsor of terrorism list. That, you know where Sudan is? Sudan's across the water from Saudi Arabia. I saw this yesterday. Sudan was where, at one point, Saddam Hussein was in hiding. So that was a state sponsor of terrorism designee, and yesterday they took him off the list. So that's good, don't you think? I thought I'd call them up at some point. Who would you call in Sudan? You know, maybe we'll schedule a trip. Thank you. Looking for every good piece of news that we can find. What else we got? Let's see here. I'm trying to find a note here. Can we just start over today? Please. Can I leave and come back? Stay up. We'll see you tomorrow. This Widecast was produced in Chicago by Natasha Rodriguez. She's not afraid of anything.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Thank you.